I want to thank Jerry for making it possible and even paying for it. And that's the greatest part, maybe. And thank you for the organizers in convincing him in doing that. And also inviting me to give a talk, of course. Okay, I'm going to give a talk on invariant theory of finite groups, so I will not discuss Lie groups so much. Thank you, Dim, in already giving an introduction to this field. But if you missed this talk, it doesn't matter too much because we are kind of complementary in a certain sense. So I'm working with finite groups acting on vector spaces. Well, more generally than that, also on polynomial rings. More generally than that, factorial domains. But today I will restrict myself to actions on vector spaces and polynomial rings to make it a little bit less technical. So reflections. Reflections exist also on characteristic P. Of course, a typical element, typical matrix like this acts like a reflection. Well, this is what I would call an ordinary reflection. One eigenvalue minus one. And it leaves a subspace of codimension one totally invariant point by point. Yeah? This is an ordinary reflection, or if you replace minus one by a different eigenvalue, yeah, it's still called a reflection, or a pseudo-reflection, or a complex reflection if eta is an element of the complex numbers. Still the same property, it has at least a codimension one subspace, point by point, fixed. Yeah, and then these are eccentric characteristic zero type reflections, that's one taste. But in characteristic P, there is a little different flavor of reflection of finite order. These are the transfections. If you have a matrix of this form, in characteristic zero it has infinite order. But in characteristic P, P bigger than zero, this unipotent element has finite order and fixes a codimension one hyperspace point by point. So all three are reflections in my type of terminology. So I will not call things like pseudo-reflection or generalized pseudo-reflections. It's way too long for me. Reflection is something that fixes a codimension one subspace. Of course, this is for linear, but you could also have nonlinear actions. And then you can generalize a little bit further. So on the polynomial ring, so K will be the field that's a need not be algebraically close, usually. Sorry. Oh, I have to sorry to myself, not to you. K is a field, need not be algebraically close. Often it is a finite field. Usually it will be characteristic P, but need not be at this moment. Yeah, this element will act on it in the usual way, and then it will fix two variables, and in this case, and one variable will be changed. And this type of thing, the tool fixes, well, whatever. This is what it does. So the y is replaced by y plus x or y minus x. Should be y minus x, but doesn't matter too much. Yeah, but you can also have actions on polynomial rings that did not preserve the usual grading. You can have polynomial rings where the variables have different degrees, and then you could have things like this. So leave x and y fixed, And then the z is replaced by z plus xy. Of course, it does not preserve now the usual graining because linear quadratic. But if you give z degree 2 and low degree 1, it does preserve this different graining. Yeah, and again, something of codimension 1 somehow is left fixed. And only there's only one other direction that's not left fixed. So the way of generalizing the generalized reflection to non-standardly graded polynomial rings, then you could sigma is an operator, one is an operator, difference of the operator, this becomes something inside the polynomial ring, and you will say sigma is a reflection or generalized reflection, whatever you want to call it. This here is a reflection if there exists an irreducible polynomial such that this here lands in the principal ideal generated by F. Yeah. So here tau minus 1, x tends to 0, z tends to 0, y is tends to y minus x, so it is tends to x. But these are the three generators, so x, y, z is all contained in the principal ideal generated by the variable here, x. But x need not be a variable in a more general situation, and for induction purposes, you often want to do that. Plus, you can replace this by say a factorial domain. Then you have a generalized reflection. But the definition is the same, so it's really not that weird in a certain sense. So these are reflections in my setting, and finite groups generated by reflections, or reflection groups, are exactly what they are. These are finite groups acting on rings that are generated by reflections in this sense. Of course, in the classical situation, say the real numbers or the complex numbers, you know all the reflection groups. They have been classified. If I'm well informed, for the real numbers, it's, I guess, Coxeter, or maybe it's even 19th century stuff, I don't know. But Coxeter did more than only classifying. CN, it's Shepard-Tontaut, called the unitary reflection groups. Of course, these contain the well-known Weyl groups of Lie groups, compact Lie groups. So the A, B, C, D, E, F, G types all have related reflection group. But now you can also ask for different, more general fields, and they have been classified by group theorists. I don't know the names by heart, but group theorists like Mike Wagner and Zaleski, Sereskin, and who else? Cantor. So it's quite a job in doing that. But they have been classified. I have to be careful. I should say irreducible reflection groups. Yeah, in the classical case, it doesn't matter, because if you have a reflection group, another thing you just tag on. And if, and otherwise, you can break it up, because you have complete reducibility in any case. Yeah, and then we know, of course, as people here in the audience, that the invariant theory, so if it is... if it's one of the first two types, and you take the ring of invariants, then this is always a polynomial ring. First it was done by, well, it was a priori done by looking at the list, calculating all the rings invariants, seeing that they're all polynomial, yeah, and then Shepard and Todd gave an a priori argument for the different direction. If you start with a group, finite group, such as polynomial, such that invariant ring is polynomial, then it is a reflection group. So this is often forgotten, but this direction is not a classification argument, but it was an a priori argument. So in the first two cases, over the complex numbers, this is true. Or you can more generally, if you take any field and you suppose that the characteristic of the field does not divide the order of the group, this is still true, but it does not use the classification. It is by a priori arguments by Chevalier, written up by Borel as a ghostwriter, as far as I understand. So the famous paper by Chevalier was ghostwritten by Borel. Sorry? Even published is even worse. Well, better story. But this is, of course, not the whole story, because this condition is does not cover all the cases, because there are many reflection groups where it's not the case. For example, if you take the group of matrices of this form, where A, B, C are were in a field, say FP or F2, is generated by this type of element, which is in transfection, despite an AA. If you put it together, it's AA. AA is also transfection. So this is also a reflection group. So it's reflection group, but a ring of invariants is not polynomial. So you don't have to look far to get examples. So it's really not that hard. Of course, here there's a problem here. This is not an irreducible, but you can also irreducible if you take over FP one version of the orthogonal group. You have various. You have two flavors, but anyway. Each one of them will also give a reflection group, but now it's irreducible. Say GU4 doesn't matter so much. Well, to be safe, GU6. GU3 might still work, I'm not sure. But in general, this is just your orthogonal group, your ordinary sins generated by the ordinary type reflections. The orthogonal group is generated by ordinary reflections. This is ordinary, except C is replaced by ZP. Also, it's a reflection group, but not having a polynomial ring of invariants. So, this theorem does not generalize right away. You have to add an extra condition to get it right. And the extra condition was not so very clear, yeah? What's the question? Is there a question? Okay. Well, there are various ways of looking at those things, of course. Again, in this nice situation, you have a property that is inherited by all the point stabilizers of linear subspaces. If you take a linear subspace and you take all the matrices that fix them point by point, it will be a subgroup. In general, it need not be a reflection group. Under this condition, it will always be a reflection group anyway. And it's equivalent.
Yeah.
For finite group case, it's co-regular and co-free is the same thing. So that's not hard to show. So the freeness or the co-freeness or the co-regularity is the same thing if you start with an action polynomial. Now the reason is because it's automatically equidimensional. All the fibers are zero-dimensional. So co-free should be co-regular plus equidimensional. That's the equivalent. And here, equidimensional is automatic. Okay. So what this remark means is the following. If you look at all the fixed-point spaces for an element which is not the identity, of course I have a faithful action, so I assume. Now I take all the fixed points subsets for elements. It will be not a subspace of V, but it will be subset of V. Yeah. And if this condition is satisfied by being generated reflections plus all the stabilizers of linear subspace also generated by reflections, then, so let's say if P reflection group and P does not divide the order of the group, now P is the characteristic of the field, then this set is just the same thing as if you only take the reflections. Yeah. Now this here is where this is the set where the stabilizer is non-trivial. The complements are the regular elements. Yeah? So this is where you have, these are the points that have a non-trivial stabilizer. This is called, if you look at the quotient map, so this is the collection of orbits in G. Then where this map is ramified is exactly in that set. So that's the ramification locus. Quotient map, or the orbit map, whatever you call it. Yeah, so it's a natural thing to look at. So if it is a reflection group and this extra condition, then the ramification locus is a union of hyperplanes, or reflection hyperplanes, in fact. Yeah. So the ramification locus is pure in codimension one. There are you cannot have something like a plane and a plane and then an extra fixed point space sticking out with a different order. They're all components of the ramification locus is codimension one. Yeah? Okay, here I'm drawing pictures, so I assume more or less that it is algebraically closed, otherwise the pictures are a little bit dangerous. Yeah. Then you have to start thinking of schematically the same start of stuff. So subvarieties must be replaced by ideals. Right? So that's what you have to do. But for the ramification locus, in fact, there are various ideals that define it. It's not just one. Of course, you can take if you just look in the algebraically closed case, you can take the ideal of all the functions that vanish on this set. This is a radical ideal. But this is not the right way of doing it. You should start from a ring theoretic notion instead of otherwise. Well, in the setting of commutative algebra, there are in fact at least three different notions, three different ideals that are defined differently, that all define the same ramification locus. So these are the schematic ramification loci. Okay, there are often too complicated to state. This is, let's write it out. K scalar, there is one due to neuter. There's one that's not defined by Galois, but anyway, I attach the name Galois to it, and there is one which is related, this to Dedekind, which is not measuring the full ramification, but only the co-dimension one part. I will not define them except this one. This one is easy to define for us. Yeah? Okay, so you have the ring of invariants. You don't know too much about it, but you can take, and let's say the dimension of V is n. Yeah, you can, then you can take n elements of the invariant ring. Yeah, and then you can take the partials with respect to the variables. The variables need not have degree one in general, but and then you take the determinant. So this is just the Jacobian, the determinant of a Jacobian metric. So it's what they call Jacobian. And I fixed the basis, but doesn't matter too much. It's only a scalar that makes it different. So what is the first scalar different? That's something that is playing a role often in classical invariant theory. Only usually you take only generators, but you could do it from any n elements. Need not be generators. Yeah, we know that if there are generators of the polynomial ring, this thing is interesting. Yeah, but now I take unimodular. No, it's just F polynomials. I take the partial derivatives with respect to the variables. It becomes a matrix. I take the matrix, take the determinant of the matrix. That's an element. These were just any n elements, and you should vary among all the n tuples. So let me first state it, and then I will discuss it again if it is still unclear. This scalar different is generated by the Jacobian determinant of any n tuples, all n tuples of invariants. What is unimodular?
Because the different d of each n is transforming like a vector in the space, and so you're looking at df1, minus 2, etc.
Yeah, I'm not saying this. I have to be clear. This is an ideal. This is an ideal, not in the invariant ring. Maybe if that's confusing you. This is the ideal in the big polynomial ring. Because I agree with you. This here is what you calculate here. Even when you start with an invariant, this will be a semi-invariant with a determinant character. Oh, yeah, well, I meant those elements, right? Those elements I take in the invariant ring, then I take the Jacobian, then it will be a semi-invariant for the determinant character. Then it takes the ideal in the polynomial ring by all those elements I can get. Yeah, it will define me an ideal, and that ideal is called the scalar different. He introduced it.
In this context?
No, in a more general context, but if you restrict to this context, this will come out. Yeah? Of course, I don't want to bother you in the general extensions of ring situation, because you might have indigestion afterwards. Yeah? It's really technical, but this is really easy for us to understand. I hope you agree. As soon as I remove the confusion, that's all. Yeah. So for all the things you can get your hands on, you take the thing, you get the ideal, and you get something. Okay. the remark is, if I take the, or this also comes sometimes called a Jacobian ideal, whatever you call it in this situation. It comes generated by the Jacobians of elements. And if I take the zero sets of the Jacobian ideal, it will be zero sets in V, yeah? But this is exactly the set of ramification. So this you can so you can think of dk, the k are different as the ideal generate ideal defining the ramification locus. And now at least one theorem we can state, which is general, has nothing to do with characteristic P or not, which says the following. So you have an action of a group on a vector space. Let's make it a little bit more general to give it a new. So G acts on the polynomial ring, and the degrees need not be 1. It can be higher. Okay. So now it's not a linear situation anymore, but this does not matter. Yeah. I still have a notion of reflections. If it is a good reflection group, then this ramification locus is pure. I mean, the union of hyperplanes. In ideal theoretic terms, you would say, well, this ideal has a primary decomposition for all primary components of height 1, whatever. Yeah? And no height 2, there are no embedded components. So now, situation is. So the two statements are equivalent. First is so the invariant ring is polynomial. On the other hand, it is the ramification locus is of codimension 1. And there are no other components. Yeah, set theoretically that you only have codimension 1, and there are no lines sticking out. Yeah. But now I want to have no lines sticking in either. I mean, I don't want to have embedded components. Yeah. So you could have varieties where there are things embedded. You can have embedded components. An ideal can have embedded components. But here it says, well, if you look at the primary decomposition of this ideal, let's say it this way. This is the same thing as saying as, let's make it simple, is a principle. So that's way better to understand for an algebraist. Yeah? So, that's why I introduced them. Exactly, because they don't play a role. The classical situation only works with linear variables, and all kinds of techniques used that they are linear. Yeah, and here I don't use anything except something like this. So this becomes an ideal theoretic situation. This means, therefore, this ideal of all possible Jacobians is generated by one Jacobian. Yeah. So this means if you take any n invariants and you take a Jacobian, it will always be divisible by one Jacobian of n specific elements, and those n specific elements will be generators of your polynomial. So. Maybe after a little argument, anyway. So you derive easily a criterion. So where I take n, just as many elements as the dimension of the ring, then the following are equivalent. F1, then generate the polynomial ring. So this implies, since you have n generated, it's a polynomial ring. On the other hand, if I take the Jacobian of those particular elements, then it must be at least non-zero. This means those n elements are algebraically independent. Yeah. But I also want that the degree of the Fi's, well, you have to subtract 1. Degree is minus 1. If the degrees are 1, then it is 1. This becomes the exponents in the ordinary sense. I want this to be equal to a certain number where delta is the differential degree. I will discuss this a little in a moment. I don't even have to assume it, but you can.
No, because you write
down
the degree of the
effect. Yeah, even in the degree, the highest degree, the top degree thing, because the lower ones will vanish anyway. But if you were happier in this way, I assume they're homogeneous, but there's no really need for that.
I can't understand the equation, because if you make permutations, then you don't change the first one, but the second one is going to change.
You want delta
on? I forgot the sigma. Okay, now we have to discuss what this number means. Yeah. It's very much related in the classical situation to the number of reflections, divided by 2 or something like that, or multiplied by 2 something. So very closely related to the number of reflections. In fact, it is exactly the number of reflections in the classical situation where all reflections are ordered 2. So you have seen those things before, for sure. Only not in this formulation, I think that's all. Well, it preserves the grading. No, it does not come from a representation. It's just a group of automorphisms of this graded ring. In the sense, no.
Any
action. No. It will follow. What I should say is this. I replaced reflections by the hyperplane. Yeah? And all the union of all the hyperplanes, yeah, is somewhere in here. Exactly. The irreducible components of the generators of this ideal will be exactly the defining equations of the reflection hyper surface, because it need not be linear anymore, it will be curved sets in a general situation. Okay, yes. I said there are more difference. So instead of working with the Kähler difference, which is not so hard to define, we could have done the same thing, replacing the Kähler difference by the Noether difference, which is in Benson's little book, or by something which is Galois, which is also easily defined. But you cannot use this one. It's the Dedekind difference. So now I will discuss the Dedekind difference a little bit, because it is related to the delta here. Okay. So now the Dedekind difference. So the Dedekind difference does contain this one, always. Well, there's a technical definition and a less technical definition. Yeah.
So when you're done, then in fact the generator, the ideal, is just the product of the polynomials that define these school dimension one.
When I'm done, I have those generators, then. Will be principal ideal.
Right.
Will be a product of it.
Right, then you take the reduced components, each one is codimension one, the reduced components is given by polynomial, you take the product of those.
Up to certain powers.
Right, and that is the ideal.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. It's once you are in this situation. Otherwise, you are in that situation. So if you don't have this beautiful situation, what you end up is with this one. Yeah. So Dedekind and different. What is this? Linking it with Jim's story. Just actions of p groups on graded polynomial rings, whatever. You have the trace or the transfer or the average without dividing by the order of the group, however you want to say it. Yeah. So this is the operator. Summing over all the trends, all the different things. Well, what is it? It is a map, of course, that takes an element in the polynomial ring and gives you an invariant. And the image of it was an ideal. Yeah. Yeah, so this element is a special element of all maps from here to there. But if you multiply by an invariant, you can put an invariant outside. So it is really a map of modules over the invariant ring. Yeah? So it's just one particular element, and there's no reason to only take this one. Why shouldn't there be others that are interesting? Yeah? So that's now where the Dedekind different will start to play a role. The observation I make here, that follows from general remarks, is this whole collection of interesting maps, because it starts with an element and you get an invariant. These are the maps you want to know about. Yeah, you can describe them fully. Yeah, and they're all combinations of traces, but it's a little bit more interesting because it's okay. There exists an element. Unique up to scalar, of course non-zero scalar, that's pretty obvious. I call it theta, such that any element that gives you an invariant from an ordinary element is obtained is this type of map, a function, and what you do, you apply F, but before that you divide. Okay? So you have to understand what I'm meaning. So I have to be careful. For some H in K. So all the functions look like this. Multiply by some H. Divide by theta, now we have a fraction. Fractions are not allowed. Yeah? Too bad. I nevertheless take a trace. Yeah? But luckily enough, it ends up with our denominators. Yeah? Such a theta exists. Unique up to, so, yeah. So to describe all of them, they are all of this form. So somehow you miss out a couple of those interesting projection operators, not the projection operators, if you miss out the state. If there are no reflections in your group, then theta is 1. So in Jim's case, there are no reflections except in the 2 or 3 cases, so his case is general enough. Okay, this theta is a homogeneous element, yeah, and the delta is the degree of theta, this delta. Okay. Okay. In a characteristic zero situation, you are allowed to divide by the order of the group. More generally, in a non-modular situation, you are allowed to divide by the order of the group. In a modular case, no, you are not allowed to divide by P. P is zero. You cannot divide by zero. You cannot divide by the order of the group, but you can divide by something else sometimes. Yeah. So, let me say this way. No. Nevertheless, there are elements that you can do a little bit more with, and that's the element that Nolan was talking about. You can. It is a discriminant. If you have a reflection group, it is a discriminant. Exactly. These are just it's motivated also by the Schur function. Yeah? Okay, let's say this way too. You don't have a projection in characteristic P. Yeah? But now you have to be careful. Yes, you can have a projection in characteristic P. But not for modules for the group, but you can have projections for modules over the invariant ring. Yeah? So projections might exist. And I do. For example, if the dimension is 2, always. They do exist. Even when you can't divide by the order of the group, even if you don't have a projection as a G module, you can have projection as a KVG module. This means, for example, if this is a direct summand, if this is a good property, this has a good property. This is comma quality, this is comma quality. So you can apply it for a couple of situations in general. Yeah? So in general, this is not comma quality, but if it's a direct summand, yes, then it is. Well, it's in effect, it exists if and only if. If you take the smallest possible h there, yeah? So 1, so if you take the map F going to just divide by this theta and you take the trace, then this map is surjective. It's onto. Yeah? So this map is this type of map. Okay? And if it is onto, then it is a splitting. Even only if. Yeah? So basically what it is, I've divided by theta. Yeah? You could have divided by the order of the group, something similar, but that's what it is. Yeah? This is the direct summand property that I talked about. It is a direct summand, if and only if this operator is surjective, so you don't miss any invariants. So you can construct all the invariants with this operator. Yeah? So that's the direct summand property. And it is really therefore related somehow to this mysterious element theta, which is very useful. And you can describe this theta as a product of it, of of a product of irreducibles and powers, and then alpha alpha defines reflection hyper surface. And also the n alpha can be described. Well, if there are only ordinary reflections, then it is 1. If it is pseudo-reflections of a certain order E, if you take E minus 1, usual stuff. And if it is not an ordinary type reflection, you have to do a little bit else. But you can look at it locally. You can really look at the hyperplane, and you look at all the elements that fix a hyperplane. Then it's a smaller group, and then the invariancy of the smaller group will give you this exponent. So you don't have to calculate a full ring of invariants, you have to calculate it only for the reflections. So it only depends on reflections. So that's the remark I make. So everything can be calculated only using reflections, so it only depends on the subgroup generated by the reflections in the group you were working with. Okay. So now I'll give the proof of Serre's theorem using the criterion, and then I'll tell you what a Serre's theorem is. So, again, in a situation of a action on a polynomial ring. If the ring of invariance itself is polynomial, then it's generated by reflections. It's called Serre's theorem all the time, but somehow it's not so fair because Shebert and Todd did it before them for a complex case. They lacked a little bit of technique to rescue it in a general setting, and I'll give you the rescue operation I did. So it should be fair, Shepard, Todd, because I will give now exactly the proof of Shepard and Todd using this criterion. Yeah? So, proof. The ring of invariance here is polynomial. Yeah, so there exists F1 to Fn. These are generators of the polynomial ring of invariants. Yeah, those exist. Take them. Take n of them. Yeah, so they exist. Okay, these are generators. Okay, they are generators. Why? So this situation applies. Yeah. But you can think of an ordinary case if you want to simplify. Yeah. Well, probably Serre's theorem can also be generalized to this situation. But this is right away a generalization. It's the first dividend you get from this little bit more situation. Well, from the criterion, it follows that the Jacobian of it, of those elements, is non-vanishing, plus the sum of the exponents, I mean, if you're least theorist, you would think of that way. These are kind of the sum of the exponents. Equals the number of reflections, well, in the generalized sense. Yeah? So, there you go. Now we take for for W, the subgroup generated by the reflections in your group. So it's a subgroup. Automatically normal, because a conjugate of a reflection is a reflection also in the new sense. Yeah? So now we forget about this group, and I use the criterion for W. What do I have? These are invariants for the full group, therefore invariants for the smaller group. Fine. Jacobian is non-zero. Sum of the exponent is delta. Depends on G? No. Depends only on W. Okay, so I'm the situation for the group W. right? So now I can go up again. This means now I generate invariance for the smaller group. Criterion again. The same elements generate the invariant ring for the smaller group, W. But this same ring as this one. So now we have two faithful groups acting on the same space and the same ring of invariants, so that the group is equal to the reflection group. Isn't this a nice proof? This is Shepard-Todd's proof, using a couple of technicalities that he didn't know yet. They didn't know yet. Yeah? Serre's proof can also be rescued, but Serre used more heavy machinery than I did in the proven here. I did not tell you how I proved it, but basically it is because a certain collection of ideals are chained into each other, and then if they're chained, then you're done. It's really not that hard a proof. Serre's proof is a little bit more involved because they use the purity of ramification locus in a more general setting. Can be done. Just this proof. I like it because Shepard and Todd did it the same way, except they don't use these deltas, but they use that if you take the reflections, then since it generates reflections, it will be a polynomial ring of invariants. And then something with Hilbert series, you see that the sum of degrees are the same, which is basically this identity. And it goes, okay. So here this is looking schematically at the reflection hyperplates in a certain sense. It gives you this type of result. But there are, of course, other things you would like to resolve. Now I just go back to the situation where all the degrees are, degrees of the generators are one. So just the familiar situation of a linear action. Yeah, and I, and now I have it's the same thing as a linear representation. And I suppose now that it's irreducible. Yeah? Now the situation is as follows. The polynomial ring is, the invariant ring is polynomial. Yeah, of course. Serre or Shepard-Todd show that it must be generated by reflections. That's necessary. But as I stated now, it's wrong. Like I said, there are examples where this is wrong. Yeah. But now I add a little extra to make it right. Yeah. And the other thing is this. Now I add this as an assumption. It's a direct cement. If it is a polynomial ring of invariant, then it is co-free. Co-free is way stronger than just being a direct cement. Yeah, so one direction is clear, the other direction is true. It's a theorem. Yeah, so to rescue the Shepard, Todd, Chevalier, Coxeter, Serre, Burber, Key theorem, I might have forgotten a couple of other names, yeah, is you have to add this condition. Then you make it right. Yeah. Because now I have done the same mistake as Shepard and Todd did. I used the classification. Yeah. Yeah. Conjecture. I can forget about it. That's my conjecture, but that's not a theorem. Okay. So the proof is just looking at a long classification. Kemper and Mahler looked at them closer. They classified which of them have a polynomial ring invariant or not. Yeah. And now for those that are not, I checked that this property is not satisfied, because this property, I know, if it is true, it is also inherited by all the point stabilizers. So what you do, you replace the big representation, big group, by the point stabilizer of a codimension 2 space, so you get a small group, and a small group you can handle. Right? So basically, you look at reflections or two reflections, and there you can see it. So it's by hand. I don't like the proof at all, I must say, but classification proofs are still proofs, even I don't look like them. So this is one case where it's irreducible, or a G is a P group, but I need it still to be abelian. So it's either irreducible or it's a P group, but an abelian P group. So there are lots of them, lots of abelian P groups, but then it's not by classification, then it is by an a priori argument. I have other cases where you can do it as well. So this is ongoing work. I hope to prove this without the conditions. Seems reasonable. I don't know any counter examples, of course. And the origin of this work for me was this special case, because if you reformulate this new conjecture in all the languages, it boils down to a conjecture made by David and Weylau and Jim Schenk. And, well, they might not recognize their conjecture, but that's where it came from, so at least thanks for the conjecture. So each time I try to prove it, I put something else. So I like this type of thing. I only hope that no one else proves it. That's all. Thank you very much for that.